KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org. Non-commercial and community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Chi Miigwech. Bonjour, relatives across our great Turtle Island and beyond. This is Deanna Standing Cloud, your host for the next hour on Medicine Bundle, the show celebrating Indigenous people and our allies as we creatively embrace our gifts of healing and connection. What's in your medicine bundle?
Time just at me and say it with your chest. Last time I saw you, you couldn't see less. You playing checkers, but I'm playing chess. Well, you act like my ex got a lot to address. How am I pretending Resi when I'm booked on the red? How am I pretending and blood quantum's in the red? Got a tribal ID if you wanna act like the feds. Supposed to be a gorilla, so let me show you what that is.
All across Turtle Island, this is your hostess, Deanna Standing Cloud. I'm looking forward to tonight's conversation. You are listening to Medicine Bundle. Tonight is Friday, March 28th. In the evening, it's springtime, and I'm just looking forward to talking about some positive, cool things with my buddy here in the studio. You'll have to forgive me. I have had a cold for the past week, and it's just hanging on there, hanging in. But you're listening to our show here on KFAI. I'm going to let my guest introduce himself, Miigwech.
Hello, everybody. My name is Bimbatu Michitim, or Nicholas Deshaw in English. I am Boy Support Ojibwe, Eagle Clan. Very grateful to be here today. Like Deanna said, she's been a longtime friend of mine, and so I'm always grateful to get to do things with her. And this is just a really cool opportunity. But in a way to begin, I suppose, you know, I like this idea a lot of Medicine Bundle, of just sharing stories and everything. Stories are something I'm very passionate about, both fiction stories and just people stories, the way people live, move through their lives. I always like to engage with those in any way I can, you know, whether it's through journalism or writing or just talking, having conversation. And I think one of the powers of those stories a lot of times is that it's just connection. So often I think people feel like, oh, you know, I don't really have much of a story, or I don't have much to share, or what I know or what I've gone through is so, you know, disconnected from anyone else. And that's almost never the case. Oftentimes when you take the opportunity to really share who you are and what you've been through, you find a lot of people will have had similar experiences. I've certainly been surprised when people do share their stories and hear things that I really related to. So I'm hoping today that, you know, some of what I share can be helpful to people, and hopefully, you know, you have some good takeaways that you can bring into your own life in some positive and healing ways. I hope that, I can do this in as good a way as I can, in that good way, as the powwow MCs like to say, you know.
In a really good
way. You pulled that line yet?
I do sometimes. I don't do it too much, but
In a good way.
That's good. It's good. I joke, but I like that they say that. I think they should always say that. That's a good thing to say.
Right. Yeah. It's like one of those cliches in Indian country. Like, it's, oh, that's a, in a good way. But like, when you think about it, it's really our way to keep that mindset, because there's so many, you know, there's so many things that can happen to us in our lives. And like, if we make sure to, you know, like take it as not only like a physical thing, but like, it's working in the spirit world, and like it's for the better good of us all. It's like, that's the good way. And just being really toxic positivity, but like just knowing that like the spirit world has you, and you have spirit helpers, and you're, you know, you move forward in a good way. And I think that's what I felt like when I actually first met you. It was maybe 2017 or so, 2018. Maybe 2016, but I was invited by Chaz to come up. I have a number of lacrosse sticks, and he had asked me to come up and do a workshop. And that was only like the first or second time I actually been to Net Lake, and I was like, why haven't I ever been up here? This is gorgeous. You guys have like, this is so beautiful. I don't know, like when you're not been to a res and you just like think about it in your mind, you're like, okay, whatever, my res is better, but I'm not, but it's beautiful. I was like, wow, you guys have paved roads, and it was such a beautiful, you have paint on your road, and
pave is amazing.
Yeah, I was like, wow, this
great
is
asphalt up there.
Good asphalt. And but it was beautiful. Like, we ran into a bear. Yeah, it was like,
wow,
eagles flying. I was like, this is majestic AF over here. But it was the perfect time. I forgot what time of year it was, but it was like not hot and not cold either. And we were outside, and the sun was shining. And then you and I were just like talking about lacrosse, and then we just kept talking, and we talked the whole day.
yeah we really spent a lot of time together that day. But we prepped that moose hide too, you remember that?
Yes,
we did that moose hide scraping. That was really cool.
That was so fun. That was awesome. Yeah, I left there feeling like super schnob.
Yeah. Yeah, as you should. I mean,
when did you start playing lacrosse? Because you were like very familiar with lacrosse. You like attended OOG, so you were like all schnobbed up. And I'm like, I got kind of intimidated when you're like, I went to OOG, and I'm like, geez, really? Because I can't even apply to that. I'm intimidated by the application of OOG. So tell me about your experience there.
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah, no, don't nobody be intimidated by me. I'm just some guy. OOG was, I was at the very first OOG back in, 2013 or so, I guess it was. I was a student at UMD at the time, and, you know, just really trying really hard to learn my language as best I can. I took every language course I could. And then when I had taken them all and I hadn't graduated yet, I started taking them again, just to be sharp. And, my teacher, Wabashki Makwa, or Wabuk, Brian McGinnis, he told us about this opportunity with Ojibwe Motadida Omagi the Kibinong, or OOG. And I was like, okay, yeah. You know, I was 22 and, you know, got anything really going on in life at that time. In a lot of ways, like, you know, I shouldn't say that, but you have a lot of flexibility in life at that time. So it was a 3-week immersion setting. you know, it was interesting because they were just learning kind of how to do it. It was really intense. Not in a bad way, but just in a, like, okay, like, we're, you know, Ojibwe Mo and Eta, like, only Ojibwe. And, you know, I did well in my classes, but it's so different when you're in a lived setting. You know, we stayed at Fond du Lac College. We stayed in some of the dorms there, and we lived there for 3 weeks. We could leave on weekends, but I didn't have a car, so I just wound up staying. It was, you know, you kind of realize the gaps in your knowledge really quickly. You realize, like, oh, like, actually, like, how do I say, could you please open the window? Do I know how to say that? Like, something, you know, so you kind of run into that, and it's exhausting. And it's interesting because, like, it was, it was a lot, and I actually have kind of gaps in my memory from it in some ways. Like, you know, again, like it was a great experience, but just it was so much knowledge all the time. Mm-hmm. I really came out of there, I think a lot of the elders there and the teachers commented, like, you know, you really improved through this. Mm. You really are a better speaker than when you came in, which was so encouraging for me to hear, because it was tough. But I definitely took a lot away from that and had a great experience. And I really treasure that time that I had there. You know, some of those elders sadly have passed on. Mm. And so just recognizing the value of having had, you know, that kind of complete opportunity to like just ask them whatever I wanted and like have them share the things they wanted to share with us and you know, almost all in the language, that's powerful. And I definitely don't take it for granted. Mm. So I encourage anyone, though, don't be too freaked out. Like if you're working at it, like, you know, if you have the opportunity, do OOG, do immersion. Mm. If you can. It really, really will help your language skills. And we need that. You know, we need as many people speaking as much Ojibwe as possible. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, don't be too freaked out. It's really grown a lot over the years. They really do a lot to work with you. And there's a lot of cool opportunities there.
Yeah. So, yeah. I was just up. Oh, I think you were at the language symposium. You were there for a day. Just recently?
Yeah, I was there the first day. Yep. Had to, could only make it for one day this year, but yeah, that was really cool. I always had a good time there. Yeah. I'm not expecting my second home. Like, I'm Bois Fort, but I didn't grow up there. And when I went to UMD, I spent a lot of time on Fond du Lac. So Fond du Lac really has a very special place in my heart and in my life. So whenever I get to go to Fond du Lac, I always treasure it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's Great Lakes Band. So, I mean, like, I always think of it's like the same type of schnapps because it's the same. I actually had a grandma from Fond du Lac. I don't know her name. And then I have a grandma from White Earth. So I think, you know, as Anishinaabe people, we're all, you know, all kind of like have some kind of relationship with other, because reservations are like a colonial type situation. So,
yeah,
but
my grandma was born on Fond du Lac actually too. So,
mm-hmm.
There you go.
So you have that.
Fond du Lac's a place of grandmas.
Yeah. Grandma. Gnocos. It might be an auntie too. Aunties and grandmas. But
probably.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that. So I think it was the final day at the language symposium. It was, well, I think they did the tour to OOG. I wasn't able to go. Mm. But at there was a presentation for, I think there's a mom, like a family program. So Nicole Nealon is a friend of mine, and she was, their program was so cool. And I actually did a story this week about Sugarbush and how food sovereignty and things are exercised in that program with the little ones. I think it's under 5. So it has grown like all these different dimensions because it's not just one, you know, it's like so many different aspects of the Ojibwe family experiences. You know, the kids and elders and all different phases of your life. So it was really cool to see the work that they did or that they're doing. And it's, you know, it's only going to grow, I would imagine, because they're developing little speakers. So it's really cool.
Yeah. It's really cool how they've expanded that into, you know, a lot of us there who were there initially, like, you know, we have our families now. Yeah, that's the need. That's where it's gonna come from.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you implement language with your kids on a daily basis? Because I struggle with it.
Yeah.
I try to every day because they're so immersed. My kids are not in an immersion school. There's Indian Ed. Right. But my daughter, I heard my daughter was like teaching her daycare. words, because she'll bring in, she has like a little otter and she's like, this is Nagig, and no one's ever heard that word, but she'll explain and like tell them stuff. She knows, you know, like a sema and like how to I want to get beyond the nouns, so I'll try to just use as much as I can. How do you go about like navigating such saturation in English with your kids as a dad?
Yeah, it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. You know, I'm not able to stay in the language all the time or anything. Mm-hmm. And even when I try to like go on long, okay, we're going to do like 20 minutes or something of Ojibwe. It's hard. My son is so exposed to English all the time and he's so hungry to learn. So he's always taking in more. And there's just this fire hose of English, and it's hard to even get like, let me pour you a little glass of Ojibwe here, you know? It's definitely not easy, but one thing I try to do, and I try to remind myself, and I think maybe this is useful for other families too, you give what you can. I remind myself, I didn't know Ojibwe as a language existed until I was about 15. Mm. I was a freshman in high school. And then I started asking, kind of learning and doing my own research and stuff and trying to learn as best I could. And I started asking, you know, my grandma and stuff, like, and she's like, oh yeah. Like, you know, and it was like one of those things I just never thought about. But she only knew two words. Mm. She knew Anishinaabe, which she said meant friend. Mm. And I'm like, well, I suppose I could see that. Sure. The other word she knew was moo, which, for those who maybe don't know as much about moo is poop. those are the two words she knew. I have a feeling maybe she knew more if she would have been, mm-hmm. you know, like exposed to a little more. She started to learn more. She learned like the word Dikanaga and cradle mm-hmm. board stuff, you know, at the end of her life. And so I remind myself that's where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. Such a total erasure of the language in my family. So for my children to be able to have anything is big. And I remind myself too, like, you know, yeah, I'm not fluent. Yeah, I can't say language, you know, my wife doesn't speak Ojibwe. So it's not really fair to her also to be like, just like, oh, let me just go off and, you know, stay in Ojibwe. Like I need to make sure she's always part of everything we do. But she's also very encouraging that I use it as much as I can. So I just remind myself, like, my children will know that there is a language and mm-hmm. they will have a decent vocabulary and they get to decide what they do with that. Mm-hmm. You know, giving them the choice that I think my family didn't have until me. And even with me, it was only because like I was seeking out so many resources and stuff. You know, I was started teaching myself Ojibwe using cassette tapes through this program called Pimsleur. It was decent. Mm-hmm. But there was so little. These days there's so, so much more. So, and also too, like letting I have two kids and my son's about five and my daughter's still a baby. So she's still getting words. But letting my son kind of lead things in some ways, you know, like I don't want to overwhelm him. I want Ojibwe to be a positive experience for him. I don't want to be like, now you have to use Ojibwe now. Like, oh, I'm not going to do anything with you unless you ask me Ojibwe. But just like trying to find ways mm-hmm. to encourage him. And when there are times when he's curious, he's like, how do you say that in Ojibwe, daddy? Or like, oh, nashgain, bede, albaneshi, bijan. I'm like, oh, that's right, get good English. Like, yeah, there's a bird there coming around. You know, just really be encouraging. So, mm-hmm. so I think just that, like, you know, do what you can, because up until very recently, you could be arrested mm-hmm. for that. Your children could be taken for that. So if you're bringing any language into your home, even if it's just a little bit, you're doing a lot. Mm-hmm. And one thing too, I'm reminded talking to other people in language circles, not just Ojibwe, but other indigenous languages, like, you know, everyone's goal isn't necessarily to be a fluent speaker. You know, we're not all trying to like live completely in our traditional language. Some of us just want to be able to be polite and say some simple things and get by, and that's okay. You know, if mm-hmm. that's where you're at, that's where you find yourself, that's okay. That's a lot. And you know, maybe that'll change. Maybe you're like, oh, maybe I want to do more. Maybe that's just where you're at. You know, let this language be yours and take ownership of it and let it apply to you in the way that it makes sense for you. So, you know, I just really want to remove shame. Mm-hmm. I really want to remove guilt from this process. Wherever you are, that's amazing. If you're doing anything, that's amazing. If you're not doing anything and you want to start, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, you do what you can and it's all good wherever you're at.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a hard thing too, because I used to make myself feel really bad about not knowing certain things and feeling guilty and really having this yeah. urgency. And then the whole experience of experiencing the language the way it should be is removed, because you're like forcing yourself to like, you know.
Yeah.
So it's more of a, you have to feel good when you're learning, and you right. have to be in a state of like appreciation and gratitude and alertness and like awareness of your environment, and it's a whole different activation of your spirit and your consciousness, instead of just like mm-hmm. here's what this word means, because that's kind of like language learning for of indigenous languages are more than just your mind. It's like you're activating a whole, the whole being of who you are. So it's a little, so you have to be gentle with yourself because you know, it was hard to, I gave myself a hard time many times. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as well, like I really went through that, like after, you know, I feel like I overemphasized it was intense. It was, but like, I really kind of checked out of language for a few years. Mm. And, in some ways I regret that because there was more time I could have learned more at the time, but it's like, it's what I could do. And I just kind of learned like, that's not, for me at least, that's not a sustainable way to approach language.
Mm-hmm.
Like I need to, like you said, feel good about this and have a positive experience here. Like, I think there's a time to push yourself. I think mm-hmm. there's a time to be like, I'm just really going to go for it. But like, that can't be your only approach because you'll burn yourself out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just, it just makes it way too hard. You know, you can't, there's times. So I've also done a lot of martial arts in my life. And like, you know, there's a classic scene in like old samurai movies where they're sitting under the waterfall. I'm like, oh, this is all tough and intense. There's a time for that kind of training.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a time when you need to step away and just like dry off, you know, like I can't live under a waterfall, you know, like I need to like give my mind a break and stuff. And like I said, there are kind of gaps in my time looking back at Oog, just because it was so much information all the time. And my brain was like, just trying to hold on to as much language as I could. And so sometimes like talking to my friends who were there, like, oh, you remember this day? I'm like, nope. Like I remember the language lesson mm-hmm. from that day, but I don't remember having lunch with you that day. I believe we did. Yeah. I just don't remember it. So yeah, just like you can't, you know, you have to have it all. Like you have to, you know, maybe have those intense times, but don't only live there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's good advice too, because it's a journey and it's a marathon. It's not something that we're going to all of a sudden check a box and say we're decolonized and put a stamp on it and we're done. It's a whole thing because it's taken how long for us to be stripped of all of our languages and our culture and songs and mm-hmm. stories and culture. So it's going to take a lot to get back. But I will say that I'm super excited to see so many young people because like there's people that I don't even know anymore. I'm like, I probably know your grandma or your mom or somebody, but I don't know who you are, but they're doing so many cool things and it's already happening where I don't know somebody, the young ones.
I know. I said the same thing. Yeah. And I've seen teenagers who are like, oh, you're like a better speaker than me. And you're like 15. That's amazing. Like, I'm so glad to see that, you know, and actually too, that reminds me too. I had this conversation with my friend Perry Drift, who's one of our council members at Voice Fort, and a friend of mine. And you know, he was doing some historical research into our community, and said like back in like just the 1940s, there was some guy who was planning to go to Net Lake, and they asked him like, "Oh, what are you going to do to have a translator? What's your plan there? You need a plan for that." And I'm like, wow, so okay, so 1940s, the language was so strong, you couldn't get by in English in a lot of our communities. And I'm like, boy, you know, that's not that long ago, you know? So it's like, really, it's been hard for the language. I think it's been a tough, what's it been, like 80 years? But that's, hey, looking at the history of our nation, of our people, even within colonization, that like, no, it's only been a very short period that our language was not ubiquitous to our communities in some ways. And that's like, hey, that happened quickly. I bet we can recover from that pretty quickly. You know, that wound might not be as deep as we think in some ways, you know, not to downplay. I certainly don't want to do that. I don't want to downplay that. It's an awful thing. But you know, we don't have 500 years we need to recover from necessarily for a lot of these things. Like, no, we have about 80 years.
Mm-hmm.
That suddenly sounds a lot more doable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that suddenly feels a lot more achievable to me. And that we're seeing so many more young people come up that are just passionate about their language and culture and learning and that have a lot of skills in them. You know, it just gives me a lot of hope. And I just feel really optimistic in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I feel like that too. I think the cool thing about our language is that it's not like, okay, this is some cryptic hidden situation where we have to like
right.
go to this place and go to this cave and find a tablet or something. But it's like, it's actually embedded in our DNA because the creator gifted us this language and in programmed the sound of the language into our DNA. So it's cool because we are carrying it, and it's more like waking it up rather than finding something external somewhere. Because so if we think about it like that, and you know, like I was telling, I forgot where, and it just came out of my mouth just because of all the stuff I know about the culture. The cool thing about us is like we don't go to just one person who knows it all, and we like sit at their feet and, you know, give them a same on, you know, smudge them down all the time. But we all carry a piece of the culture, and all of us together create this beautiful quilt of who we are as Anishinaabe people. So I think it's really cool. And those young people, you can see it visually because they're passionate and dedicated. And when I was a kid, that wasn't like a thing to like be proud to be Native, because I was born in 79. So I was a kid in the 80s, and I didn't see any Native people in the media. And when I was at school, all the kids that got, you know, attention were not Native people, you know, Natives. Or so I was kind of ashamed to be Native, because there's nothing to point to that, you know, to show that I was, to be proud. So but these kids these days are proud, and they get to be proud, and it's cool, you know. It's exciting for me to see that.
Yeah it really is. I think we're getting more of those, like, you know, more visibility of Native people. And you know, I really relate to what you're saying. You know, I was a 90s kid. But even that, like, you know, I saw very little. I went to a school that, like, was called Wakazoo Elementary in Michigan, and named after, they would say, "Oh, Chief Wakazoo. Yeah, he was in Ottawa who lived around here." I was like, "Oh, okay." And that's all we ever knew. And there was, like, literally, you know, those, like, cigar store Indians they have, like, going like this, they hold hand up with a faux headdress and whatever. We literally had one of those statues in that school. And it was like, so I'm at a school with an Anishinaabe name from an Anishinaabe leader, and he's still being erased in some insane way. And it really took me until I was an adult to really reflect on that. And I actually have been back since. And they really improved. They have a whole story of the Wakazoo family is actually Wakazo. Mm-hmm. And we have a friend who's a Wakazo, actually, telling a lot more of their story of the area. And a lot of them actually wound up in Minnesota. So, like, just learning a lot more nuance, like, no, this wasn't just some semi-mythological person. This is a real family and stuff. But, just, like, that's one thing I think of with my children, is just that I want them to see, you know, Native people in a lot of ways, in every context, in every place. And I think they can now in a way that maybe just wasn't possible in previous decades. And even, too, I was just talking the other day with our friend John Hunter about lacrosse, and how he was giving a presentation at the MIA conference we were at, and how he's like, you know, I don't anymore have to explain what this game is. There are just, if you're a Native kid, you've seen this game, you know what this is, and they're like, wow, that's wild. Because even, like, not that, like, maybe 10 years ago that wasn't the case. So, you know, we're really seeing that, and certainly within our community, a lot more of this, you know, a lot more positivity, a lot more growth, a lot more pride in our heritage, in our language, in our ways, in our games and everything. So, yeah, I love seeing that. Yeah. And I'm excited that our children get to come up in that world.
Right.
That's really cool.
Right.
Yeah.
I know it's really challenging these days. And I'm trying not to let it get to me a lot. You know, I'm trying to, like, just for my own mental health, but I am super encouraged and inspired by a lot of what's happening in Indian country and, like, how far we've come. I remember we would play, it was like in 2016, 2017, but we'd play lacrosse at Powderhorn. Yeah. And we had the, you know, they're like cool white guys walking by and that lived in the Potterhorn neighborhood, and they're like, "Hey, are you playing Quidditch? Or what is that game on Harry Potter?
Oh,
are you
yeah,
playing Quidditch?
I think it was Quidditch. One of those times. Quidditch. Yeah. Yeah.
Quidditch." I was laughing, and yeah. I would laugh so much when I'd play. Like, I wasn't that good playing, but I felt good. I felt good. Like, I wasn't very skilled. I knew how to do the basic stuff. Like, there was lots of people who were very skilled, and but I had so much fun, and it healed me in a way that I never thought was possible, but, because it was like that waking a little piece of me up inside where I didn't even know it was like sleeping. It was so crazy mm-hmm. because I dropped my daughter was like, she would play, and I gave her a ride to like play, and she's like, "You should play sometime." And I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I'll play sometime. And I'm like, "Just get out of my car. Hey, just go play. I'll be right back in 2 hours." But the next, I think the next time or two, she's like, "Come on out. It's not what you think. You should just come play." And I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah. And I played, and I was like, this is so cool. This is so amazing. Like,
yeah.
And that whole time we had intergenerational playing. I think mm-hmm. we had a couple of elder, like an elder. Yeah. Yeah. And they came to play with us, and we gifted them a stick. And so there were so many cool, and just a little time that I played. I still like play catch and stuff. I haven't played. But there's so much in my mind that I broke through that I didn't think was possible in that time. So
it's beautiful. That's why it's the medicine game.
Yeah. For real. Yeah.
that's so powerful. And like, I appreciate you saying that too. Cause like, you know, like, I think we have this like, you know, hyper competitive, like elitist idea around sport mm-hmm. in kind of Euro-Western culture. And just like, you know, one thing that's been beautiful about the rise of our traditional games, especially of Bagan Dawaven, is that like, you know, just come. It's mm-hmm. more important that you're here. It's more important that you're trying. And like, I, you know, we know people who are just incredible, and there are people who come, it's their first day and they barely know what they're doing, but they're just as cheered on. They're just mm-hmm. as welcome. And it's just as exciting and inclusive to them as to someone who's a superstar, you know? And that's, yeah, there's so much medicine in that. And that's such a fun experience. Like, yeah. I got to bring my dad out to a game when they came to visit, and I gave him a stick, and I'm like, "Well, he'll catch." And he like, my dad's like, just like the greatest athlete who's ever lived. In a lot of ways, like, you know, he's in his 60s now, but he's still just is like just going, doesn't slow down. He's just always been someone who's like, you know, just very talented in that way. And so I gave him a stick, and I kind of explained it a little bit, and I gave him a toss. First time he's ever used one of these things, he catches the ball. And I'm like, what? Like, how? That's not easy. Like, he's just like, oh yeah, just do it. And he's like, oh, okay. And he didn't wind up playing the game just because, you know, like I said, he's in his 60s, his knees are a little rough. Though honestly, I was like, I don't know, I think he'd be fine, Dad, if he did. But you know, just that, you know, that little way of just including him, and mm-hmm. I bring my son into the game, and everyone's encouraging of him, like, even though he's just a little guy. Yeah, there's so much medicine to that, and such an awesome experience.
Yeah, but, for sure. That's so hilarious, because it took me probably maybe a month and a half to actually, I think, score and then like catch the ball. And then, like you said, my mom.
Me too.
This game, I'm all coughing. But she, I gave my mom a stick, and she caught it the very very first toss, and I'm like, okay, that's like that. All that's right. Amazing. So that's hilarious that her parents, yeah, and it must be something so innate that we can just pick up a stick, and it seems so familiar, like we've like never done this before, but for some reason it seemed very familiar when I did that. So totally,
yeah,
very cool.
I just remember. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Oh. One last thing. I just remember my grandmother would always have like native stuff around her house. And I just remember seeing a stick for like one of the first times. And just, I don't know, it just was so reminiscent of her when I saw that. It just reminded me of being at her house and just talking with her and stuff. So yeah, it is just so ubiquitous to who we are in so many ways.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's cool. I think the first time I saw, I didn't see a stick in real life. I saw a mural at the Little Earth Gym, and they were playing, and I thought, when you don't know about it, and you kind of see, I don't know who painted it, but it just seems so far away from me at the time, because I'm like, what are they playing? That seems so cool. That must be so, you know, so ancient. And then now I can go back to that same gym and be like, I played that. So it's super cool. It's like a history book on the wall, but you played it. So it's very cool. We're making history as we go.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to take just a quick little break for our, just a word that we want to make space for. And we'll be right back with Nick Deshaw Mishtadam. Did I say it correctly? Mishtadam?
Yeah, Mishtadam.
Oh, wow. Mishtadam. So this is Medicine Bundle, and I'm your hostess with the mostess, Deanna Standing Cloud. And we will take a small break and be right back.
From the heart of Asia, KFAI presents An Evening with Alash. The Cedar Cultural Center hosts this enchanting show with the pride of tuba. These musical masters bring their proficiency to a variety of native instruments, as well as their famous Tuvan throat singing. What distinguishes them from earlier generations is the subtle infusion of modern influences into their traditional music. One can find complex harmonies, Western instruments, and contemporary song forms in Alash's music, but its overall sound and spirit remains decidedly Tuvan. Tickets for An Evening with Alash can be found at the Cedar Cultural Center's website. Visit thecedar.org for more details.
We are back. We are so back. So we're back with our guest, Nicholas Deshaw. I kind of want to talk about you as a writer. I saw, so you published a children's book, which was super cool because I talk about like publishing books and then people like, oh, I'm going to publish a book too. And then they actually do it. And then I'm like, man, how did you do that? So, but we were in the Native Authors cohort together and we got a lot of those technical skills and we networked with our cohort and then we learned from actual folks who have been published and then even like the business side of it. How did you get into writing and how did you come up with the concept of your current book, the children's book?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like I always have the stereotypical cliche writer's answer. It's like, oh, I've always been writing. But it's kind of true. Like, you know, I kind of around elementary school at some point really, really liked comics, actually. But I learned I'm not very good at drawing and I don't really have the interest or patience to get good at drawing. But I did really like writing. And so I was always trying to come up with stories. And I made the mistake early on of thinking you have to write like a long book as your story. Mm-hmm. It's like I'd never heard of a short story. I mean, I probably hadn't at that age. But at the same time, I always was honing that. And it was just kind of a casual thing for me. And, you know, so I dabble in it here and there. When I was in college, I had a few short things get picked up by the student publication there that you could submit to. That was cool. That was an encouraging thing. And a local paper in Duluth as well published a poem that I wrote. You know, so just like little things like that, but I never really took it super seriously. But I had this idea for this story that I really was excited about. You know, I kind of hadn't been writing for a while. My now wife and girlfriend were just talking about this story I had. And I'm like, yeah, it could be like this and that. And the other thing, and she kind of stopped and said, like, I think you just need to write. I said, oh, okay, cool. So I did, and that really launched everything. Like that one little thing of her telling me, and she's just been like such a huge person in my writing pursuits and career. Like she just really encourages me and listens to me for whatever ideas I have. Like, and sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, I have a writing thing I want to talk to you about. And she's like, okay. And she's always like just so great about it, even though like I can go on probably too long. In, let's see, what year was it? 2020. Yeah, it must have been 2020. I was shopping this book around. It was a graphic novel. I'd finished it. And I saw just on Facebook, interestingly, that Penguin Random House had a lot of their imprints were looking for Native writers. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I didn't see that you were only supposed to reach out to one of them. And I reached out to like 10 of them. I was like, oh, whoops. But one of them got back to me, Nancy Paulson. And she said, this is kind of more YA. I'm like, yeah. She's like, but I do like children's picture books. If you ever have a children's picture book, let me know. I might be interested. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So my wife and I had kind of come up with this character, Loaf the Cat. And we have a cat named Sophia, and her nickname was Loaf. And we'd kind of just for funsies developed a character. And so I just developed the story because I was like, oh, people like cats. Cats are easy to tell stories about. And so I wrote this out. I had a writing group. I had them, you know, give me some feedback. And then I submitted it back to Nancy, and she said, like, yeah, let's make this happen. Let's publish this. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, cool. So I feel like I got lucky in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a lot of luck when it comes to working in arts. It's definitely not a super typical route to publication, but yeah, the book came out last year. Loaf Cat Goes to the Powwow. I'm really excited about it. Very proud of it. Available where books are sold. So yeah, I want to check it out.
That's so cool. Yeah. Loaf the Cat. Well, you said your cat inspired you, but, is this like a path you want to keep going on with like the children's books? Because I know being a parent, you always want to have really good materials for your kids to be exposed to with language and cool characters and things like that. Is this something that you're going to continue to do?
Yeah, I'd like to. I mean, I'll write whatever they'll publish. I don't necessarily think of myself as a children's writer per se. I do like writing children's stuff. It's a lot of fun, and I'll still do that. I don't just want to do that though. Mm. I'd like to do more adult novels and stuff. But you know, as you know, you have a shout out in Loaf the Cat. I based MC off of you. change your name a little bit, but yeah, you're in there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely want to keep going. Absolutely.
I really appreciate that you just with the female MC idea, I'm wanting to like back away a little bit from that because it's something that I did like I've done and it's great. I want to see other women step into that role, so I really appreciate that you put that idea in people's planted that seed because it's not just it's for everyone, and I feel like like lots of aunties have great potential to be a power MC, and I'd much actually rather listen to them sometimes and at a powwow. So good, thank you for that, because I want people to have it in their consciousness that it's not just a male dominated role. And so thank you for that. That's really cool. I was like, ooh, I look all brown in there too.
that was very intentional on my part. Like I wanted to not only have a story where Native kids could see themselves and where non-Native kids could, you know, come into a story that was approachable to them and showing Native people in contemporary life, but I wanted to like make a little bit of a comment about powwows themselves. Like, we do need more female MCs. Like, wait, look, this character is a female MC. Mm-hmm. Isn't that cool? Let's have a lot more of that. So, you know, for some kids, this might be their exposure to powwow in some ways. And that's, oh, okay, that's just going to be normal. So, yeah, that was very much intentional decision.
Awesome. Thank you. I was talking to Art about, like, the genres of writing, and him and Marcy Rendon are collaborating on a book, and he had said that romance novels are like really profitable. So I'm like,
you can do so well in romance.
Really? That's amazing.
Oh yeah. If you look at like indie author like pages and stuff like on social media, there were people, oh yeah, my books are selling so well. I was able to go full time into writing. They're all romance writers.
Really?
Almost all of them are romance. Oh yeah. There's so much money in romance writing. It's crazy. Yeah.
I might go down that route. Who knows? There's a lot of stories.
If you like it. If you like it, do it. I think that I'd really encourage people to do that.
Yeah.
Huge market. It's not anything I think I would ever want to write. But I mean, I'll say never say never. Like, you know, stuff comes up.
I know. That surprised me because he was like, yeah, there's a high market for romance. Because I'm thinking like sci-fi or like futurism or something like that. And then he said romance. I'm like, oh, so this is how we, this is how we are. this is how we are. Oh, back to basics. So yeah, I'm, you know, after he said that, I started thinking about like different res loves a different.
There you go.
a love triangle, a just kidding.
I had an idea for a you know, a romantic short story where, you know, two Shinab meet on a plane, our Shinabe folks meet on a plane, man and woman, and they're really, really hitting it off, and they're getting to know each other, and they're kind of asking, like, well, where are you from, and who's your family, and they're, you know, they're checking, like, are we related, you know, and, like, they're like, oh, no, no, okay, okay, and then at the very end, it's like, oh, like, you know, who's your name, what's your clan, like, oh, yeah, I'm Bear Clan, I'm like, oh, yeah, me too, like, oh,
okay, see you later, all right, good, bye, cousin. See you later.
My cousin.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, because it's stuff like that we don't think about. I had a coworker when I worked with Indian Ed, and she's, you know, an elderly. Well, I mean, she didn't seem elderly, but she's an old German lady, and she's, you know, I still keep in contact with her today. Just, you know, a German lady. So she was like, she's like, why are all these books so sad? Because we had a native resource library. And then she also asked about why we talk about if you're cousins or not. And I showed her a map of like in like the Great Lakes. And I was like, so, hey. I was like, so this is LCO over here. And this is where I'm from. And I was trying to break it down because in the grander societies, like you can have romantic interactions with people, not, you know, worry about that if they're related to you. But in Indian country, you have to be kind of careful because we're all related so like intertwined so much. You have to like actually ask either by clan or by straight up being related. So I had to explain that. And it's kind of like one of those concepts that are not quite explored, so we could totally go down that rabbit hole on a romance novel. Totally.
I
have in my hand the Our Stories book.
Oh, cool.
And this is a collection, so this is an anthology. So the Native Authors Program was formed to support emerging Native writers and completing the book manuscript for publication, and it's been curated through All My Relations Art. So Nick and I were in the same cohort. I think it was cohort 2, the second.
Yeah, I think it's the second one.
Yeah, and there's one other one going right now. And we actually, I don't know how we pulled this off, because I feel like I was so busy at that time. I just like sent in stuff from my Google Drive. I was like, this should work. But I kind of wanted to be more intentional, but that's just how, you know, life works sometimes. But you have a couple of pieces in here. Let's see. Do you
just the one short story?
Just
right
one?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is that one about?
So it's called Letters to the Earth, or Letters from the Earth, or Letters to the Earth. I forget.
Letters from the Earth.
Letters from the Earth. That's it. Yeah. This is a short story I wrote before we were in this, and it's just one I felt really proud of and I really liked. And I learned so it's written in a series of I call it transmissions to an indigenous space exploring crew from Earth. And I learned recently actually that there's a term for books that are written like this in like letters or transcripts like this, and they're called epistolaries. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you know, like Dracula famously is written kind of, a lot of it is written like that, you know, series of letters and journal entries and stuff. Kind of found footage is the idea. I wrote it kind of as a way to explore, like, you know, what could full decolonization really look like? What could a situation where, you know, Native people are able to fully realize our traditional government structures and able to fully establish complete independence from colonial powers, what would that look like? What would that take? And so it's a short story kind of exploring those ideas and a little bit of the conflict that arises in there. through the eyes of this young woman who's the, I wouldn't say she's the betrothed or wife of one of the space explorers. But yeah, so it's a, it was just a piece I was pretty proud of. So I'm glad that it finally has been published and going to be in the story.
Yeah. It's really cool. Book. Yeah. That romantic, element is there. And there's, I love how you've, integrated native language, in there. And it's from the year 2492, 2491, talks about the Haudenosaunee, and just, I guess, future at a future time. And it just shows that Indigenous people have endured all the way to almost 2,500 years. How long? I mean, and that's how we are. That's how we roll, though. Just enduring. Yeah. But yeah, this is awesome. And there's, yeah, I really enjoy it. Yeah, I thought there was more from you in here. That's just a teaser, folks. You're going to have to stay tuned for more. Is there anything you're currently working on right now?
Yeah. Oh boy, I've got like four things I'm working on right now. I can't do just one project at a time. I've learned some people give that writing advice, like, oh, make sure you finish a project before you start one. I'm like, do whatever you want. Like, just finish them. Make sure you finish them. But yeah, right now I've got a middle grade novel I'm working on, set in Canada, just over the border in Ontario, about a community who's fighting to regain their ricing rights and privileges. And there's the premise is the rice has been destroyed by people who have built up all these lakefront properties, but then through kind of a series of like strange mystical magical events, it's suddenly back overnight. And we follow the story of a young man, or a middle school kid who's trying to learn what that means and like how he's evolved and how to help to grow his community. So I'm working on that. I'm also working on a traditional lacrosse graphic novel that's set about 90 years in the future, where it's kind of like, I describe it as Mighty Ducks meets Sandlot, but traditional lacrosse instead of baseball or hockey.
Love that.
So it's trying to be like a fun kind of sports manga or graphic novel, but it's also funny. It's a pretty, I try to make it a lighthearted story, because like I really try to like, and then I have another book coming out from Nancy Paulson Press that will be out, I think, next year. Another children's book.
Very cool. Those are all awesome concepts and projects to be working on. That's amazing. And it's Thanks. So cool. Like, as far as like your medicine bundle, I was thinking about like really following the things that you like to do, because that's really what I was intending on with the theme of the show, is like, what like lights up your spirit? What makes you happy?
Yeah.
What path are you following that, you know, that makes you kind of come alive? And I feel like that's what path that you're on. And it's not like, you know, I used to have so trauma where it's like, oh, I'd be, you know, there's something in me that I, you know, would feel threatened by someone who's following their own path. But it's not even, you know, like you kind of have to go through that in order to come to a place where you appreciate, because when people are following their own path and they're doing something that they love, they're helping everyone and they're helping you. So I think this is so cool and inspiring that you are just going for it. Like your wife said, just start writing, because it's like, what else are you going to do? Because I talked a lot for very many years and I'm like, I'm just talking about this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then you just get to a point, you know, I'm, if you round my age up, it's 50. So I'm getting there. So I just want to do it, because there's really not much time. And when you get to this point, you're like, oh, you know, I'm not that old, but I'm old enough to know how this kind of goes. So I just want to know that I want you to know that when I see you, you inspire me. You inspire me to keep going. You inspire me to keep writing. And you inspire me to just go ahead and just do it and just write. Because what else, you know, just do it. There's nothing... who are you going to talk to about it? Like, let's just write. So thank you for following your path, because that's really a brave thing in today's society, is to just, like, you know, cancel out those voices that say you can't do something, because that's, to me, that's such an old thing, and I just, it's like, doesn't serve me. I'm not gonna hang on to it anymore. And I appreciate you doing that and going forward. Brave Mushka, is it brave heart?
Congrats.
This guy,
congrats. I appreciate that. That's why I do it. That's why I do it. That's, you know, so that's really encouraging to hear that it helps you that way.
Yeah. I'm super happy that I met and we, our paths crossed, and I'm just excited to see where both of our paths go. And I'm happy to call you my friend, and I'm happy that just we're doing cool stuff, and because everything else is just, you know, yeah. Oh, I just sound just like an old auntie just trying to tell real good wisdom, just dropping wisdom bombs everywhere.
Oh, you're nailing it. You're totally nailing it.
I'm practicing. Elder in practice. So I like to give my guests an opportunity to offer a song. And Nick, what song are you offering today?
Yeah, it's going to be by one of my favorite artists, Porter Robinson, and this song is Look at the Sky.
Oh, wow. And I've actually never heard the song. I feel so out of it. I need to know. I need to go into music a little bit more. But Nick, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Please give my love to your wife and to your beautiful babies. And I wish you all the best and all your cool projects you're doing. And I think we'll probably be together in Duluth promoting our book, I think in June.
Absolutely.
June 6th.
Yes. Yep. I'll be there.
Awesome.
It'll be great. Come check it out, everybody.
Yes. We'll be in Duluth. Come through. Eh? All right. Meekwich, Mishtadum. Did I say it right? Mishtadum.
You got
it. Yeah. Hoa. Meekwich, Bizendowian. All right.
Trust me, she said, he said. Love me forever, he said, she said. I can't live without you. I think of you all the time. I want you so much. I need you even more. I got to make you mine, she said, he said. Be mine, make me happy, he said, she said. True love burst into flame. Passion's a fuel burning higher. How excited they could get, just thinking of the newness of it all. Every waking hour belonged to the other. Every sleeping hour was the same. Living for now did something to tomorrow. First quarrels fun to kiss and make up. More quarrels turned to fights, inflicting hurt. Heated words deadly as napalm, searing hearts and minds and souls. Hard to forget, let alone to forgive. Suddenly there is nothing left. Different flames rage out of control. Change love to owning, nothing to win. The minds gave them something to lose. You lied to me, he said, she said. You never loved me, she said, he said. All you ever think of is yourself. I never want to see you again. I hate you, he said, she said. Get out of my life, she said, he said. You lied to me. You never loved me. All you ever think of is yourself. I never want to see you again.
Get out of my life. I hate you.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org. The community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
What's up? This is Toolman.
And this is Bear Witness.
And we are the Hallucination.
And you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Best of.